Welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Wednesday, July 5th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me today. We've got a pretty big story, important story coming up about the possibility of a false flag attack on the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, in an area actually controlled by Russia. And it looks like Ukraine and NATO forces are going to want to blow that thing up and blame Russia and use that as a pretext to ramp this up into World War III. So we're going to be talking about that coming up. We've also got an interview with Mickey Willis, the filmmaker of the new film, the new part of the Plandemic series. It's called The Great Awakening. And that it's a really solid interview, hard-hitting. We're going to have that here coming up after my monologue. And I think you'll find that fascinating. Now, I've got some other kind of hilarious but important news to share with you. You know I have my new show. It's called Decentralized.tv. And the show's doing great, a lot of feedback. And, of course, I'm diving into all kinds of decentralization projects and technologies and interviewing people. We've actually done five shows already. We've recorded five shows. And episode two is airing, in fact, today, come to think of it. It's airing today, and that's an interview with Jonathan Emord, who's running for the U.S. Senate. And he says that he will vigorously defend your right to have your own crypto wallet and engage in self-custody and run your own nodes and these types of things. Really, he breaks a lot of news in that interview. That's coming up today on Brighton.tv. I think that interview runs at 6 p.m. Eastern. I think that's the time. But that episode will also be featured on Decentralized.tv sometime later today as well. But anyway, that's coming up. But as part of my investigation into all these different crypto projects and different coins and so on, I've been doing quite a bit of acquiring of different crypto coins. And also, by the way, I am attempting, as you know, to take all of my after-tax savings, you know, retirement money, whatever, out of the fiat currency banking system because I think it's going to collapse. That's my assessment. And I've been attempting to convert it all into gold and silver and crypto. And this has been very difficult, and I had a new thing happen today. Well, let me back up. So the Gemini exchange has frozen my account now for a week with thousands of dollars in it. They just froze it because I was using it, you know, buying crypto on Gemini. They're like, oh my God, that might be fraud, you know, so they froze it up. And so I'm still waiting for them to do something about it, and they don't do anything. It's like customer service appears to be non-existent on Gemini. So I went over to Kraken, which is supposed to be this kind of pro-freedom crypto exchange and acquisition platform. It's spelled K-R-A-K-E-N, by the way, but don't use them because after I set up an account and I went through the KYC, and I wired in $1,000, just $1,000, and they accepted the wire, and they wouldn't credit the wire to my account. It was a bank wire, not an ACH or a debit card or anything like that. And the balance kept saying zero, zero, zero. And so I contacted them. I'm like, hey, I'm pretty sure that zero plus 1,000 should equal 1,000, not zero. And they said, oh, we'll look into it, you know. And then I get an email from them after they looked into it. And you're not going to believe what this says. You're not going to believe it because apparently I've been blacklisted from Kraken. Here it is. Quote, unfortunately, we must inform you that we will be closing your Kraken account. For security purposes, we cannot disclose the reason for this action. They say, now understand, I didn't even buy anything on Kraken. Didn't even make a purchase. Didn't make a withdrawal. Didn't do anything except try to deposit $1,000. Quote, your deposit is being returned to your sending bank. Please double check your bank statement for confirmation. Kindly note, they say, that you can no longer use our services. Didn't use them yet to begin with, Kraken. You got me cracking up, I think. maybe the IRS is going to be cracking down on Kraken because I heard there was a subpoena where the IRS was requesting all the Kraken tax records. I mean, all the social security numbers and the transactions from 2017 through 2020, by the way. And now I'm thinking that Kraken actually did me a favor by canceling my account with zero transactions because they have nothing to report to the IRS. It's so fun. That's why I'm cracking up. Yeah? So the other thing that's funny about all of this is, I mean, yeah, Kraken sucks and Gemini sucks. And I'm not even going to try Binance because at any moment, you know, the SEC could freeze their bank accounts. And Coinbase, are you kidding me? The thing that's actually very cool to realize in all of this is that these centralized exchanges are just another form of tyranny over crypto. So if you're trying to do something in crypto, you know, buy, sell, trade, move around, whatever, exchange, if you're trying to do anything in crypto, these centralized exchanges are in effect worse than the government because they're the gatekeepers. They control the on-ramps and the off-ramps. They tell you what you can do and what you can't do, and they can blacklist you, as I have apparently been blacklisted by Kraken. For a reason they can't tell me, for security reasons. Oh, I can't tell you. Like, your money's no good here, basically. You know, that's right. So they're the gatekeepers. And it's just as dangerous as, you know, a government institution. Here's what's interesting. I still have a bank account with JP Morgan. You know, remember when I said previously that you should have multiple bank accounts? You should have bank accounts at local banks and also bank accounts at the big international, you know, the globalist banks, because those will be the ones for sure that will be bailed out. And it's good to have multiple bank accounts. So I have a bank account at JP Morgan, and even JP Morgan hasn't closed my account. I mean, not yet. They haven't closed my account, but Kraken closed my account. What does that tell you? It means that the fiat currency globalist banks actually are more tolerant than the centralized crypto exchanges. I mean, think about that. How crazy is that? Now, of course, the nice thing about crypto is I can buy it from other people. So it's not like, you know, Kraken is going to stop me from buying crypto. I can just reach out to people I know, like, hey, you know, can I write you a check? Whatever. If I want to buy crypto, there's lots of people that have crypto that will sell it. Or I could mine it if I wanted to, right? If I wanted to just set up a mining farm and just build up crypto over time, just get rewards from the block mining. Well, there's nothing that these exchanges can do to stop that. Or I could use the services, like I just interviewed the co-founder of the service I talked about a couple days ago called localmonero.co. And at localmonero.co, you can buy Monero from people who are willing to sell it to you through a number of means, like bank wires or Zelle transfers or Zoom transfers or cash in the mail, which I'm still shocked that that's a method. I'm not sending cash in the mail, by the way, but some people do. In fact, a lot of people do, and that's how they acquire Monero or even Bitcoin. I know, kind of interesting. But that interview, by the way, is coming up on Monday. Yeah, is that July 12th? On the 12th, you don't want to miss that interview. Wait, I'm sorry, the 10th. July 10th coming up. I think that's when that interview runs. That's with the co-founder again of localmonero.co. And it's a fascinating interview. It's really good. And you'll find out how there are these networks of people who are buying and selling crypto peer-to-peer in these private trades, not going through the centralized exchanges, because, of course, the centralized exchanges suck. And as we're finding out from, you know, the regulators and the IRS, basically these centralized exchanges, they just function as spy machines for the IRS, right? They collect everything from, oh, your social security, you know, your address, your name, your photo, your passport, blah, blah, blah. And then they turn all that over to the IRS. It's like, who are you really working for, Kraken, you know? Or who are these, Gemini or whoever? Who are you really working for? Because it seems like they're working for the IRS. They're not really part of the crypto spirit of peer-to-peer decentralized money. So the answer is, I think the answer to all of this, the big picture, is that as Gary Gensler at the SEC continues to crack down on the centralized exchanges, because the SEC has sued Coinbase and Binance so far, as that continues to happen, it's going to actually force more and more people into decentralized acquisition and trading of crypto, which was the original vision anyway. That was the whole point. I mean, that's what it was supposed to be. The Satoshi vision was supposed to be peer-to-peer, not having all this centralized control. So in effect, Gary Gensler is actually doing a favor for the whole crypto industry, kind of forcing people to stop using these centralized exchanges, which has always been a bad idea. And people leave their crypto coins on the exchanges where the exchanges have custody of their coins. And then these exchanges go bankrupt like FTX, and then all your coins go poof, right? So that's crazy. You shouldn't be using centralized exchanges anyway to store your coins. Now, some of these exchanges have been a good way to buy the coins, you know, to acquire them. That's what I was using Gemini for. I was buying Bitcoin on Gemini. And apparently they have a problem with that. Like, how dare you buy Bitcoin on a crypto platform called Gemini? How dare you? We can't let you do that. I'm like, isn't that what you exist for? No. We're just here to pretend like we're doing something useful. But if you actually use the services, you will be shut down. But you see my point. But I see as more and more mainstream, you know, fiat currency banks continue to fail, you're going to see more people rushing into gold and silver and crypto, which are the three things that I've been talking about here. In fact, you know, when the Silicon Valley Bank went down, didn't Bitcoin surge up after that? I'm pretty sure it did, if I recall. Bitcoin went much higher for a while because people were saying to themselves, I'm getting out of these banks, man. I can't trust the banks. So, also gold and silver sales went through the roof, by the way. So, you know, people are seeing the big picture here. A lot of people are, and they're taking precautions. By the way, hey, let me recommend, there's a really great channel on YouTube that I've been enjoying, that if you want to learn more about crypto, and I don't hand out these endorsements very often, but there's a channel there that I found to be very informative, very rational, level-headed. In fact, the guy is named Guy, and the channel is called Coin Bureau. So if you want to find a really good educational channel on YouTube to learn about crypto, just go to Coin Bureau, type it in on YouTube if you want, and the guy's name is Guy, and his videos are very, very educational. And I've watched quite a few, and I found he's doing a great job. In fact, I'd like to have him on the show at some point if he ever has a spare moment. See if we can get him as a guest on decentralized.tv, because I like his message. You know, it's not the message that we used to hear before the FTX collapse, which was like, you know, it's going to the moon, like sell everything and buy Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin. And like everybody's going to get rich. You know, it's not that at all. It's a very rational, level-headed kind of cool approach, very educational. So check that out if you get a chance. It's well worth your time. So the bottom line is these crypto exchanges are actually essentially worthless to the vision of peer-to-peer decentralization. And this process of people reclaiming their autonomy over their own money is underway. And I just find it fascinating that with every step that I take, every exploration into this space, it just proves to me again and again and again that the banks don't work, but also centralized crypto doesn't work either. Hence the need for privacy coins. Private crypto is the only crypto that we should be using, any of us, frankly, except maybe, you know, to get into Bitcoin at first in order to trade it for privacy crypto. But it's clear that with the blacklists out there, even the crypto exchanges using the blacklist, that if you have coins that are traceable, like Bitcoin, that have a history, then you don't really have any future in that. Because if you do something that they don't like, then they can shut you down, cut you off, ban your wallet IDs, block you from the exchanges. So anyway, fascinating stuff. Now, by the way, I wanted to respond to a comment from yesterday. Thank you for the feedback. A lot of people were fascinated by my discussion about warp drives and harvesting stars for energy. and also the being able to detect gravity waves and how warp travel, or faster than light travel, by bending space-time, causes, of course, a wave, a gravity wave that spreads out. It's actually gravity and the distortion of space-time are the same thing, by the way. So a gravity wave is actually like a ripple in space-time, and those can be detected, and they do alter the speed of light, by the way. So the speed of light is, it appears to be faster if space-time is stretched out, and the speed of light appears to be slower if space-time is compressed. So it depends on where you are in a wave. And these gravity waves themselves, of course, traverse very rapidly across space-time, because space-time is, it is kind of a fabric itself, and this fabric can be distorted, bent. That's what gravity is. So anyway, some people were asking me when I said that you could take like the power of a star and maybe store it in something the size of a mason jar. And someone was asking me, like, how could that be? Because how can you exceed, you know, mass or energy equals mc squared, mass times the speed of light squared? How do you exceed that? How can you get something even more powerful in a smaller space than turning, let's say, hydrogen into energy? And the answer, of course, I want to share with you is antimatter. So just as there's a hydrogen atom in our universe, there are also anti-hydrogen atoms that have the protons and electrons reversed. And there are anti-elements of all the elements, and there's antimatter. And when antimatter and matter meet, they release an enormous amount of energy. So much so that it dwarfs the equation of E equals mc squared. And that's the simple answer to that. And antimatter weapon systems could be devastating. They could destroy entire planets if they were unleashed, even very small amounts, like micrograms of material, of antimatter material, could produce, you know, devastating world-ending explosions. And if you followed anything about exotic technology and the history of UFOs, you've no doubt come across a gentleman named Bob Lazar. And he actually talked about, I think he was a former engineer who worked at Area 51, or at least this is what he claims to be. And I think he was on Joe Rogan one time, actually. It was a fascinating conversation. But he said that the way that the warp drives actually worked on these extraterrestrial craft was to have antimatter reactors that are combined with something that he called element 115. So element 115 was painstakingly produced. And I don't know if 115 refers to the atomic mass. I mean, that's how we refer to other, to most elements by their atomic mass, like lead 202, you know, or 206. But element 115, I'm not sure where exactly that comes from or how you make it, but he says that antimatter reactors use element 115 as a fuel source, and then using very tiny amounts of this physical material, they're able to project the space-time distortions in front of the ship and effectively achieve faster than light travel. So if you want to look that up and learn anything more about that, you can look up Bob Lazar. I think, in fact, let me see if this website is even working. BobLazar.com. Yeah, L-A-Z-A-R. There it is. BobLazar.com. And you can read all about Lazar and his story, and you can decide, you know, how much you want to believe or dismiss. You know, it's totally up to you. But it's definitely fascinating, and the tech explanation is, in fact, viable. It's a rational explanation for how these things can work. All right, now there's other major breaking news that just happened yesterday. And there's a judge that just smacked down the Biden administration and its collusion with big tech to order the censorship of certain tweets or certain people or certain certain parties on these platforms. Now, I find the timing of this quite interesting. Now, the Epoch Times is covering this. It says, judge delivers major blow to Biden admin in social media censorship case. This case comes out of Missouri and Louisiana. And one of the plaintiffs in the case is the Gateway Pundit. And it was in this case, by the way, that we learned that I was specifically named and my platform specifically named by the federal government to be censored by big tech. This came out in the Discovery documents. And also InfoWars and many other sites are specifically named for censorship. So the White House, through various agencies such as CISA, C-I-S-A, was just ordering big tech who to censor. And this has been going on for years. And you may recall, by the way, that I was banned off of Twitter in 2019, and I was just reinstated a couple of days ago. And so if you want to see my Twitter account, it's at HealthRanger. That's also my account on Brighteon.social, which is actually a more reliable place to find my posts because, well, we run the platform. Whereas Twitter, who knows what's going to happen? They could reverse it at any time and kind of reban people. Anyway, this lawsuit has resulted in Judge Terry Doughty of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana issuing a July 4th ruling that essentially prohibits the government agencies, including the DOJ, the DHS, CDC, White House, and so on, and CISA, prohibits them from contacting or communicating with big tech platforms in any way to, quote, to urge, encourage, pressure, or induce in any manner the deletion, suppression, or reduction of content containing protected free speech. So this is a major, this game-changer injunction here. And Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry, who's been working on this case with Eric Schmidt, the AG from Missouri, says, quote, this could arguably be one of the most important First Amendment cases in modern history. And he's right. And so the judge is there saying to the government, hey, you can't do this because it blatantly violates the First Amendment rights of Americans like myself, who, again, I was specifically named by this tyrannical regime for censorship. And the censorship has been going on for quite a long time, even under Trump, by the way, behind his back. I'm not saying that Trump was pushing it. Trump was not pushing the censorship. But the agencies, even when Trump was in the White House, the agencies were carrying out this censorship behind his back. And of course, this continues under Biden. So this is a major decision, and it is only temporary. It doesn't mean that this is a permanent situation. And by the way, the DHS, DOJ, HHS, CDC, whatever, all these agencies are corrupt criminal cartels, and they will probably ignore this ruling. So it doesn't mean they're going to stop censoring. It does mean that now a district judge has ordered them to stop censoring, which does carry some weight, especially as this is going to head to the Supreme Court. So if it turns out that these agencies continue to censor, even after this order comes down, then the Supreme Court is not going to look kindly upon that. And we may be now at the beginning of a new era where the government is forced one way or another to stop engaging in all of this censorship, you know, violations of the First Amendment. And I wonder if this is part of why my account was turned back on Twitter. Not sure. I mean, we issued a demand letter to Twitter also, our legal team, maybe a month ago or however long that was. And that might be the thing that caused Twitter to reverse it. We're not sure. But it might also be something related to this case. So the good news is that the censorship is no longer a secret. You know, I was warning about this back in 2015 and 2016, and nobody would listen. You know, very few people were censored at that time. I was one of the very first, and nobody thought it was going to be a problem. Well, those days are long gone. Now, everybody realizes censorship is a huge problem. So the backlash is well underway, and it looks like, at least in this case, one judge and other courts are issuing major decisions that could smack down this censorship. So that's a great sign. All right, now we're going to look at the big story for today, which is this. It's a big concern that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is currently under the control of the Russian military. But Zelensky in power in Ukraine, you know, the puppet of the U.S., Zelensky has been screaming to anybody who would listen, saying that Russia is going to plan some kind of nuclear fallout, you know, attack or disaster using the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Now, anytime Zelensky starts to accuse the Russians of doing something, it's usually because Zelensky is doing it. And anytime NATO accuses Russia of something, it's probably because NATO is doing it. You know, they just project everything onto Russia to try to cover the tracks of what they themselves are doing. And specifically, Zelensky said, quote, "There is a serious threat because Russia is technically ready to provoke a local explosion at the station, which could lead to a radiation release." And then The Guardian did a story on this, the title, "Zelensky warns Russia could be ready to provoke nuclear plant explosion." And that from The Guardian, it says that several representatives of Russia's state nuclear energy agency, Rosatom, have already left the site of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. And they further indicate that, quote, "Ukrainian employees who stayed at the plant and signed contracts with Rosatom have been told to evacuate by Monday, preferably to Crimea." So there's some kind of evacuation order taking place. And then on Thursday, Ukraine conducted nuclear disaster response drills near the power station, regional officials said. That's according to The Guardian, which has been covering this. The Kremlin has denied these Ukrainian allegations. But David Sachs, one of the observers of all of this, says that this looks like a perfect Gulf of Tonkin moment. Now, Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag carried out by the United States to try to, you know, escalate and prolong war. And so, you know, that's what this looks like. And this would, if this power plant is destroyed and releases radiation, well, the winds are actually shifting across Russia and Ukraine and Eastern Europe right now, shifting to blow westward for the next few days. And this would cause radiation, a big cloud of radiation, to blow to the west, which would drop radiation in other countries like Poland and Austria and so on, and Germany as well. And this would provide a cover story to NATO countries to say, oh, we're undergoing radiation fallout because of an act of nuclear terrorism carried out by Russia. Because, of course, they blame Russia for everything, you know, including Trump's victory. And then this information would be invoked by NATO to invoke Article 5, which, you know, technically it shouldn't apply to Ukraine because Ukraine is not technically, you know, part of NATO yet, but they could issue, like, you know, like a resolution or an emergency or something, and they could say, gosh, well, we've got to escalate war with Russia because look, they're unleashing nuclear terrorism across Ukraine and across all of Europe, and now, you know, the future of Earth is in doubt unless we bomb Russia or something like that. So this is all of this narrative is being pushed out very heavily by Ukraine and also, you know, Western United States intelligence agencies and so on to try to set this up as a narrative. And the question is, you know, qui bono? Who benefits from this? Who benefits? And it's Ukraine that benefits, not Russia. So Russia really has no incentive to do such a thing. Russia is actually winning the war, and Ukraine is running out of ammunition and men and tanks and vehicles and money. You know, Ukraine is completely dependent on the West now to fund everything, to meet payroll for the government employees. Ukraine says it's fighting for its independence, but it has become completely dependent on the West. Ukraine would collapse in, you know, 10 days without the West pumping money into Ukraine. So Ukraine needs the West to be sort of, shall we say, escalated into this war. And this is the perfect false flag event for that to happen. Now, it doesn't mean for sure that this is going to happen. We don't know, but it is another viable false flag scenario that seems enticing to NATO forces and to the U.S. State Department and to Zelensky himself. It seems enticing, like they would really like to see this happen because it would give them the cover story that they need. Now, should this take place, you know, the media would jump on and say it's like another Chernobyl, but this time an act of war, they would say. It's like deliberate nuclear terrorism. And you would see the media breathlessly talking about how evil Russia is to do this on purpose and unleash radiation across Europe. But you know what else would happen at the same time? You would start to see people buying gold and silver like crazy. Gold and silver would spike. Remember what it did when Russia invaded Ukraine last year? Gold went up to 2050, I think, almost overnight. You're going to see gold and silver spike if this happens. You're going to see just rush panic sales of iodine products. People are going to be trying to find iodine and potassium iodide everywhere they can, almost at any price they can. That's what you're going to see happen. Food sales, storable food will go through the roof. You know, prepping activity, all these kinds of things would just go through the roof. You might see more people taking money out of the banks, which would accelerate the bank failures that have already begun this year. So financial instability could be the result, but that may play right into the hands of the Biden regime because they want banks to fail so they can roll out their FedNow central bank digital currency system to control you even more with, you know, a surveillance ledger system, you know, digital money, but not peer-to-peer, not decentralized, rather fully centralized, fully controlled, fully surveilled by the government. And this might be the perfect opportunity for them to do this. And then they could also, by the way, and not saying that they would do this for sure, I'm hoping they don't do this, but they could set off a nuclear bomb in the United States and blame Russia. They could say, see, Russia destroyed the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, and then they set off a bomb in, you know, New York or whatever. And then they could cancel the elections, just like Zelensky has done in Ukraine. There are no elections. They could cancel all media outlets that have dissenting views. They could just cancel the Second Amendment, cancel the Constitution, declare martial law, declare war, you know, everything. And that's what they want. They need a big emergency because Biden is about to go down. I mean, Hunter Biden left cocaine in the library in the White House. There was a hazmat alert over cocaine that was found in the library right after Hunter Biden arrived. You know, the guy is just, he's just a walking crisis center, you know, just leaving cocaine all over the White House, apparently. I guess there was some cocaine he forgot to snort, you know, or he's got enough that he can snort some and still have some on the side, you know. But that's what's happening in the White House right now. Biden has been caught smoking gun, red-handed, taking $10 million in bribes. And all of that's coming out. And there are forces that are trying to, of course, eliminate the Biden crime cartel right now. And they appear to be getting a lot of traction. So the Biden regime puppets, which is Barack Obama and probably Susan Rice and others, working with the State Department, Victoria Nuland and Antony Blinken and a bunch of other criminals, they need a big, big emergency in order to distract people from the crimes, the scandals, and the treason of the Biden regime. And so big war seems to fit that bill. And so that's why they will keep pushing for it. They've been trying to escalate this the whole time. And this is their latest ploy, it seems. So watch the news closely. The Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is the most likely target right now. And who knows? Who knows what they're going to try to do to it? I'm just wondering, why doesn't Russia just, I don't know, put it into, like, take the whole plant offline and cool the fuel rods, you know, put it into like a cold storage situation? Or how long does it take to do that? It's probably a matter of weeks. Maybe they're already doing that. But you don't have to keep the whole plant online with the nuclear fuel rods, you know, running at hot temperatures and everything. And you can kind of slowly ramp that thing down and greatly reduce the danger of any kind of shenanigans being successful. So let's hope Russia is involved in that effort, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens. But that's the crazy world that we live in right now. Now, speaking of the crazy world, of course, France is burning. It's practically a coup, I mean, a revolt, a revolution happening in France. And yet there are some pro-France patriots who apparently are taking matters into their own hands. So Breitbart reports that, quote, French media, vigilante gangs are zip-tying rioters and handing them over to police. So the existence of a masked gang of young men tying up rioters in one town is being talked about in French language publications, but the mayor insists no such thing is happening and tells local police, tells locals to call the police if they witness unrest. Anyway, it's called an anti-thug brigade. I don't know. I don't speak French, but I guess is Brigade Anticasseur, something like that, in the port town of Lorient, Brittany, reported by the local paper Le Telegram or something. Anyway, this is being reported in France, and it's kind of smacks of the kind of civil war, because some of the local French residents are sick and tired of their country being overrun by these mostly young migrant terrorists, you know, an occupying enemy force that's burned over 1,000 buildings and set over 5,000 cars on fire. And, you know, France had to deploy, what, 45,000 police so far. I mean, this is a big deal. Here it is. Yeah, 5,800 car fires. And 1,000 buildings have been damaged by fires, including 254 police stations. I mean, this is way bigger than, you know, Black Lives Matter or Antifa in the USA. 243 schools have been burned. And there have been 2,400 arrests. And apparently they're burning libraries, too, in some of the towns in France. Just burning down libraries, you know, because, you know, knowledge is dangerous, I guess. Yeah, crazy times. So this is, I think, an indication of things to come in America. So be on the lookout for that. I would not be surprised at all if this continues to escalate in France and if it spreads to many other countries across Europe. And then imagine if there's, on top of that, a Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, you know, goes nuclear, I mean, nuclear fallout event, you know, radiation cloud headed west towards France, right? I mean, imagine if there's a financial collapse. Imagine if there's a power grid failure, a cyber attack, or anything else that the globalists are trying to carry out, or another pandemic. And then you add all this chaos that's happening right now to those scenarios, and you get, you know, you get basically Europe on fire, which appears to be where this is headed. You know, we got to reach out to some of our contacts in France to see if they're seeing what the media is reporting on this, but it's looking pretty darn crazy, that's for sure. All right. Now, back in the United States, talk about some craziness, but on a different topic. You know how there's this task force, this California Reparations Task Force, that was saying that all people of color should be given, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars or something. Now they're saying that black dads should never have to pay child support. They want all black fathers to be deadbeat fathers. Yeah, this is part of the reparations task force. And I'm thinking, isn't that already kind of the status quo? I mean, do you have to make an extra effort? But there's a lot of deadbeat dads, black and white and Asian and Hispanic and so on. I mean, why would you have a task force plan to call for all the dads to be deadbeats? To leave the moms high and dry? Like, no more financial help for you, moms, even though you're taking care of the kids? And it says that discriminatory laws have torn African American families apart. Really? I would think the abortion industry has torn African American families apart. But they're saying that one of the harms is the disproportionate amount of African Americans who are burdened with child support debt. Couldn't that be because that's who knocked up a bunch of women and then didn't stick around and be dads? I mean, could that be the problem? No, apparently it's racism and oppression and whatever. So, I mean, just imagine the lunacy of this, a reparations task force saying that black moms deserve no support from the black dads. I know they're not all black moms. Some of them might be white moms or whatever, but that moms, they say, deserve no support from the black dads. Boy, there's a term, I think that's called black privilege. If you're a black man, you have the privilege, apparently, according to this task force, that you can impregnate any number of women and never have to pay child support. And that's called social justice, by the way, in case you were wondering. But if you're white, you got to pay. If you're Asian, you got to pay. If you're Hispanic, you got to pay. If you're black, nope, no need to pay because paying child support is oppressive or something. So I don't know. It's so twisted, the weird logic that these people invoke. It's just so bizarre. And again, it's also an attack on motherhood. So you notice how the radical left is trying to get rid of moms and motherhood and parenting in general, but specifically motherhood. You know, you're not even allowed to call yourself a mother anymore. You're a birthing person. Oh, happy birthing person's day instead of Mother's Day. The left doesn't even like Mother's Day. They're totally opposed to Mother's Day and Father's Day, come to think of it. Any kind of parent day is a bad thing. But this is another part of the war on moms. So it's like, hey, you know, you're being replaced. You're being said to be antiquated, that the best woman in America is actually a man. Women can't really win in sports anymore because the men come over and take all the gold medals. Women have no special standing in the social hierarchy anymore. Now you're just being replaced by transgenders all the time. And then the deadbeat dad doesn't owe you any money anymore. So good luck, women. Good luck. I mean, it's cruel. It's cruel what they're doing. But nothing surprises me out of the reparations task force. All right, so that's about what we wanted to cover right now for today. A lot to think about there. We're going to jump into the interview with Mickey Willis, the filmmaker of the Plandemic series. And that's a fascinating interview, by the way. I want to remind you of a couple of companies that have been our sponsors in terms of growing food. If you're wanting to get your food supply going, check out arkseedkits.com. That's A-R-K, arkseedkits.com. And also Marjorie Wildcraft's website, icangrowfood.com, which will teach you how to grow food. Just watch the free webinar there. A huge amount of food in a very small space. You can become more self-reliant with those the seeds from Ark Seed Kits and icangrowfood.com. If you want to buy food that's already packaged and lab-tested and certified organic, we have the Ranger Buckets available at healthrangerstore.com. Thank you to all of you who purchased products from us over the July 4th weekend, and all those orders are starting to ship out today, and you'll receive email notification of the tracking numbers and so on. And because we stocked a lot of Ranger buckets, we did not run out of them, which is pretty unusual. So we actually still have some Ranger buckets available, some mega buckets and some mini buckets as well, of different kinds of long-term storable foods, vacuum packed in very rugged bags, inside rugged polyethylene pails. So it's very much rodent proof. Well, unless you have raccoons that can work the handles, and you know, raccoons have clever little fingers, and raccoons can pull out pocket knives and open things. They have can openers in their back pockets, by the way. But if it's not a raccoon, it's probably rodent proof. So check all that out at healthrangerstore.com. And lastly, if you want to get ready for the possible nuclear event that's coming, you want to make sure you can communicate when the grid is down. Check out the satellite phone store, SAT123.com. They also have backup solar generators, which are solar-powered chargers with inverters and charge controllers, lithium power packs made by EcoFlow. And those are helping a lot of people stay online even when the grid goes down. So SAT123.com for all of that. With that said, we're going to jump into the interview now with Mickey Willis. Enjoy that, and be sure to check out decentralized.tv later today for episode 2, which gets published today, featuring our interview with Virginia attorney and U.S. Senate candidate Jonathan Emord. You'll really enjoy that interview. Check it out. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we're joined by an extraordinary man, filmmaker Mickey Willis, whose new film, Plandemic 3, The Great Awakening, is now available. It was just announced, a couple of weeks ago, and it's making waves and waking people up all over the world. The website is PlandemicSeries.com, and Mickey Willis joins us now from somewhere in Texas, I think. Welcome, Mickey. It's great to have you on the show.
Always great to be back, Mike. Thank you.
Well, I miss you. I miss you at the event. I wasn't able to go to the rollout, but I hear a lot of great things about the film. Tell me, what has it been like so far, just getting the feedback, the response from people watching this moving film?
It's been incredible and shocking, because I guess I've grown accustomed to a lot of pushback with what I create. And so far, one fact check and a lot of really positive reviews of the movie. And so I'm really wondering when the attacks are going to come. We're a month out from the release and it's going viral all over the world. And the only thing that they were suggested was false information, was I made a claim at the beginning of the film. My brother was killed by a medicine called AZT, which killed 300 plus thousand people. And I mean, big plus, a lot more than that. Yeah. But this, what is documented is 300,000 people in the 80s and 90s, AIDS patients. And so I made the claim in there. I stated the fact that my brother was killed by a medicine that killed, you know, hundreds of thousands of innocent people. And that's the only thing the fact checkers have attacked, is saying that they've twisted it to say that I suggested that the AIDS epidemic was caused by AZT, which is not at all what I said. But other than that, you know, it's just been shocking in that, and wonderful, because I do what I do because I value family. And coming from somewhat of a fragile family, I don't want to say broken, but definitely splintered, I've made commitments to myself to change the lineage of, in the direction of my own bloodline. And what I've received from a lot of people around the world is the movies bringing them back together with their children that have been indoctrinated,
really
forced away. They're watching the movie and waking up to realize that they have been, that there's an agenda behind their sudden disdain for their own parents and their disdain for their own nation. And I'm getting these messages from parents saying, thank you for that. Like my 16-year-old, my 14-year-old came to me. They watched it with their friends, or we watched it together as a family. And the first of those that I got was from a dear friend of mine named Peter. He was at the premiere. And we had a little VIP function after the premiere, and he came up to me, and his energy was kind of flat, and he's not a flat guy. He's just very vibrant. And he said, hey, great job. Love the movie. We're going to go now. And he's from Los Angeles. He flew in, and I said, oh, great. Thank you so much for coming, Peter. And he walked away, and I thought, did he really like the movie, or what was that about? The next morning, I got this long text, and he said, I had brought my daughter. I didn't even know that. He said, pretty much kicking and screaming, I dragged her to the premiere because she's been going through deep depression. She fell into depression during the lockdowns. And then when she went back to school, rumors spread that she was unvaccinated, and she's been very teased. And so she's very resentful of her mother and I. And she watched the movie and sat there in silence, didn't say a word to me afterwards, just wanted to go back to the hotel. So I thought, oh boy, you know, more trouble. and the next morning she woke up and said, Dad, can we talk? And he said, of course. I think she's 15 now. And she ended up apologizing profusely and saying, I love you and Mom, and I'm proud of you, which those words brought tears to my eyes, because I'm proud of both.
Wow.
Of you. I understand what's going on now.
The healing.
That movie had a big effect on me. I'm trying to get my friends to watch it. So that's one example of a lot of the feedback I'm getting. We're delighted.
That's extraordinary. And I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because, you know, America needs a healing right now more than ever before. And I think it's also important to share with our viewers your background. I think it's highly relevant to this project.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can probably describe it better than I, but, you know, you weren't always in this space of pushing back against the wokeness and all
you
of this.
You can say it, Mike. I was a useful idiot. Yes, you can say
it. No. You tell our audience your history, where you came from, and Bernie Sanders and all that, because it's highly relevant to what you're talking about here with this film.
Well, I'm serious. I really see I see that I was a useful idiot. I understand what that term means. It's not just a smear. It is an actual term to describe what has happened throughout history with so many dictators who have lulled and hypnotized their citizens into doing their dirty work. No dictator in the past would have been able to do what they accomplished, which is mass genocide, if it weren't for enrolling hundreds of thousands or millions of their own citizens to do the dirty work, you know, name it, from Mussolini's black shirts to Hitler's youth and brown shirts to Lenin's Red Army to Mao Zedong's Red Guards. These are the people who led the people to the gas chamber, was the citizens ultimately that did the dirty work, and sometimes in part with factions of the military. And they always called them the useful idiots, because they were, through psychological subversion, they would bring people to a state of dependency, of desperation and dependency. And that's one of the first steps. And then it's demoralization. And then once people are totally demoralized, and then they can be led to begin to question their own humanity. And,
yes.
And they start to believe in the narratives that we've all been pushed forever. A lot of my favorite films that contain these narratives that say humanity is a cancer, it is a parasite, it is a failed experiment, whatever it might be. And you buy into that, and you suddenly lose the reverence for this life, this incredible gift that we call life. And once you've lost everything that's worth living and dying for, then anything's possible. And so, for instance, Mao Zedong, he enrolled high school students and college students to do his dirty work. And a lot of them turned on their own parents and turned them in and celebrated when their parents were tortured and even executed.
And now murdered in the streets.
Murdered in the streets.
Yes.
And they celebrated because they thought they were doing something noble for the party.
That's right.
And that's how twisted we all can become if we're not careful. And these are all good people that were just so hypnotized, because what Mao Zedong, if you look at any footage of Mao's reign of terror, and you'll see guaranteed a bunch of people, and I mean a bunch, hundreds of thousands, and they're all holding a little red book, and they're always chanting and singing with this little red book. That's Mao Zedong's little red book. What's in that little red book? Indoctrination. And they had to repeat this stuff every single day until they became hypnotized and believed that he was the savior. And then he could basically tell them to do anything, which is turn on your own parents. If you hear your parents say anything suspicious and they're not trusting me, you let us know. And then
sorry to interrupt, but this is exactly, and I know that you're explaining this, this is exactly what's happening in America and in the West right now, this indoctrination. And we just saw the other day, 250 Hollywood celebrities, you probably know some of them, who signed a letter demanding that big tech censor anyone who criticizes transgenderism on children. Yeah. And by the way, that would include young men and women who have detransitioned, right? So maybe maybe as a young man became a woman and then hit age 20 and realized that it was a horrible mistake, detransitioned. Now that person is not allowed to speak out.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
That is how it begins. That's exactly how it begins. And so these useful idiots in Hollywood, which I used to be one of them, are signing something like that and having no idea how it's going to affect their future and their freedom. And so that's how all of this stuff plays out. And so I didn't know, of course, no one knows that they're being used, and no one knows when they're hypnotized. That's the thing about hypnosis, is everything feels normal. And until you look back. And my wake up began, my political awakening began, as you know, as my friend, my wake up as a human began at the standing on the rubble of the World Trade Center. That was my kind of personal spiritual awakening. But my political awakening began when I was on the road documenting the Bernie Sanders campaign from Los Angeles all the way to Philadelphia. And I was all in as a Bernie bro. I was uneducated in terms of socialism. I heard the rumors, and I knew that enough of the history to know that socialism was not a good thing. But I was fooled by the addition of the word democratic. So I would ask people, what is the difference between democratic socialism and socialism? And they would say, well, it's sharing, it's bartering, and taking care of everyone, but not through the government. This is through the power of the people, by and for the people. And I said, well, let me think about that. I've been a Burning Man. I've seen that in action. That was kind of a cool situation, to see everyone kind of take care of each other. Okay, I'm in. You know, shame on me for not looking deeper, because as I started to ask questions of everyone that was part of the entourage and new people we'd meet at every stop along the way. As someone who I film a lot of my own interviews, and then I also edit them through the years, I've learned to know intuitively when I have a totality of an answer. And when I don't, I keep going until I get it, because I hate getting back to the edit bay and just going, God, I don't really have a thing I can finish here without, they didn't answer my question. I wasn't aware of that. So I've learned to really listen to make sure they answered the question I asked them.
Yes.
And I never had this experience before, Mike, where no one could answer my question directly. And so I would ask it 8 different ways, and I would say, do you hear what I'm asking you? I'm actually asking you to explain to me how, if through taxation is how we're going to divide this, the earnings and help the people at the bottom, which, coming from a kid raised on welfare with a single mom with 4 children, I want to help the people on the bottom like we all do. But how do we do that? Do we pitch in? And they say, no, through taxation. And I say, well, who collects the taxes? And you can see they hadn't thought about that, most of them, but the ones who had will say, well, through the government. And I'd say, do you trust the government? And they'd say, no. I'd say, do you like the way they're spending your tax money now? No. So you want to give them more? I don't,
right.
This doesn't compute for me. And that's when I asked the first of 2 very important questions. And the first layer of that question was, are these people hypnotized?
Yeah.
And I started to look at them differently, realizing there's something going on here. Like, they're good people. They're not bad people. They're not trying to do anything harmful. But there's some disconnection between their education, their logic, their intelligence, and this ideology that they're giving their lives to right now. And then I realized, hold on, I'm part of them. Am I hypnotized?
But your film touches on this.
That's when it opened up. Yeah.
Wow. Well, see, it takes an extraordinary act of internal courage to do what you did, by the way. And that's why we're so grateful for you, Mickey. Oh. And so thrilled to have you as a fellow Texan as well. And to be able to talk about your film. The website, again, is plandemicseries.com. It's called The Great Awakening. But in the film, you also talk about mass formation psychosis. And, you know, you interview some extraordinary people like Dr. David Martin, I believe, and others. And you really get to the core of this issue, because sometimes I've called it sorcery. There's a kind of spellbinding sorcery at work with words and chemicals and influence and peer pressure and social media and censorship. But the net effect is a kind of brainwashing, or sometimes gaslighting, as we call it, where people don't realize that they've been recruited to go along with an intensely evil agenda that is rooted in, frankly, authoritarianism, hatred, intolerance, and anti-human agendas. That's what's extraordinary. And you're exposing all that in your film, by the way. Amazing job.
Well, thank you. And you just touched upon something, since we addressed Hollywood a second ago. This is known by a lot of people. It won't be new news to a lot of people, but maybe to some. Hollywood, the wood of a sorcerer's wand, is often made from the holly tree. This is where the name Hollywood comes from. They know they're casting spells. It's yes. Why they call it programming and all of that. And so and I was deeply programmed after I moved to LA with a big dream, 19 years old, by myself, and in a, I always say, a stolen rental car. It really wasn't stolen, but I didn't have the money to pay for it, and I just kept driving it until I finally dropped it off one night. And doing my best to make it in that industry. And this was, the beginning of, and it's kind of like, you don't even really, you can't witness the grass growing in your front yard until you step away a little while and you come back and you go, whoa, how'd that happen?
Yeah.
There it is. And it was kind of like that, where you're not able to see what's happening on a present level until suddenly you just realize, I've changed. I don't think the way I used to think anymore. And there was a point, particularly after what happened to me, what I experienced, I should say, at 2001, 9/11, and as I did search and rescue and body recovery, there was a point when I just snapped a grid for me, and I started to question things like, what have I created as a filmmaker that I'd be proud to show my children one day when I have children? I do have 2 beautiful boys now, and I couldn't think of anything. And then I started to think, because I was really close with my mother. She died. My brother and my mother died a month apart from each other due to bad medicine. And I thought, am I being my mother's son? Am I living up to what I know my mother would be proud of right now? Or am I heading to a wrong direction here? And it was kind of shocking to me that I was beginning to witness myself and realize, wow, this is how it happens. You know, I know I have a good heart, and I know that I was raised by a mother that was so, my mom was the mom of everybody. All the kids called her mom. You know, she was the one that cooked for kids. The kids that didn't have money, she'd take them to school, whatever, go buy them clothing, even though we were on welfare. She was an incredible woman. And I thought, what happened to me? I hope I'm not disappointing my mom wherever she is. And I had to really start taking a look at that, you know, and realizing that I'd kind of fallen into womanizing and all the stuff that Hollywood promotes. And I had to get back on track. And it took a number of years, and some really a lot of deep work to sometimes painful work to get to the truth of what was happening to me and at the hands of who. And I realized I'm in a very toxic industry right now. And I don't know that any of my friends are well. It's really, there's something wrong here. And so after that experience, I was unable to take part in Hollywood anymore. And I'm so grateful for that.
Well, thank you for sharing those personal details with us here. Again, it takes a lot of courage to do that. And, you know, we interview here a lot of filmmakers, and it's usually just about the film and, you know, maybe what inspired the film. But for you, understanding your personal history and the challenges you've gone through, the humanity that you've been in touch with internally and in the people around you is, I think, critical to understanding this film, which I think is an historic film. And I believe that it will represent a pivot point for humanity, at least in America, turning back to things that are sustainable for human civilization, right? Your film arrives at the correct time, just the perfect time, as the pushback begins, the pushback against insanity. And it's not a pushback based out of just straight up rejection or division. It's actually a pushback based on, wait a minute, we have to heal. We have to bring people together. And you know, we can't do these horrible things to children, or we can't just ostracize some group of people and not allow them to speak online ever again because they happen to be Christians, or they happen to be white, or they happen to be Muslims right now. So your film is arriving. And there is a question in this. Thank you for your patience. But your film is arriving at a time when we have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running for president. And RFK Jr. is also, I believe, rooted in healing. He wants to heal this nation, bring it together, not sow division. Do you see parallels between what RFK is advocating and what your film is helping to wake people up about?
I absolutely do. And he's a very dear friend of mine. And I don't know if you caught it or not, but I was just 2-3 days ago as part of a live roundtable where we got to ask him some difficult questions. And I probably asked him the most difficult questions that had to do with his belief about climate change. The rest were kind of health related. And also, I spoke very clearly about my concerns regarding the party that he's chosen to you know, continue sharing allegiance with, and very vocally, you know, expressed that I left that party for good reason. And I don't see how anyone can support a party that just committed the greatest crime against humanity in ever. And so I don't.
Which crime are you referring to?
I'm
because there are so many.
COVID, you know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm like, I can list 10 that they've committed, but okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A lot, but we all just lived through something that was, of course, there were some Republicans who participated in it, but this was at the hands of the Democratic Party by far. And so I just, you know, I have a real struggle. And I told him, I said, your campaign leaves me conflicted because I know who you are as a man. And he is, I will say, I know him on and off camera. I met him years ago when I was directing a series about climate change. And then I started to do deep research about the truth and study the actual numbers and realize that NOAA has been compromised, the agency that actually reads climate data. And I went deep for years. I know far more about climate change than I'll ever know about the vaccine data. And so my question for him was, I know that you are full in with that. So that's, you know, that's that's your thing, but are you going to forward the narratives that are terrorizing our upcoming generations right now, such that they are vowing to never make, create a family? And I had to ask him a couple of different ways until I got that answer. And I was pleased with the answer, good and bad. It was like, he still calls it an existential threat. And I will tell you, as a researched veteran environmentalist, it is not an existential threat. We are polluting the heck out of this planet. And if you've noticed, they'll use the word polluters and all of that, but they don't talk about it and they don't frame it as pollution anymore. Why is that? Why was it framed as global warming? And then we know it changed to climate change as soon as we started to reach a cooling period because they realized it was fluctuating like all of nature.
Right.
Then they changed it to climate change. Why don't they call it pollution?
Yeah, good point. Exactly.
Okay. I'll tell you the answer. And that is because we have every solution to pollution right now. And we can fix it tomorrow. We can clean the plastics of our oceans. We can clean up our soil. And he's done a great job in helping bring out the truth of the chemicals and farming and all of that. He's done a wonderful, wonderful job. And no one has done more to protect the well-being of children than Robert Kennedy Jr. So I'll always, always hold him in high regard for that work that he's done. And I'm very concerned that anyone, by anyone who will continue to call this an existential threat such that our next generations aren't going to experience probably the greatest gift in life, which is creating a family. And so I have deep concern about that. And then I also don't think, I personally don't think that his uncle and father would identify as Democrats today if they were alive.
I agree with you, yeah.
I really don't. And so I even said on this call, which I don't know if I'll be invited back again, I said, I think he had made some comment about, independent party is not a viable opportunity. And I said, I think your outlook on that is outdated, because if there ever was a time that people would get behind another party, the time would be now.
Well, and especially since the Democrat Party is shutting him out, and the Democrat Party is so rigged. And let me just apologize. This interview is about you and your film, so we're off on a little tangent here. It is related, but I'll wrap this up. But
it's all important.
It is. But the Democrat Party is rigging their side of all of this against RFK Jr. I know he's well aware of that, but they won't give him a chance. And he would, I mean, if he were to debate Joe Biden, it would be over for Biden instantly.
Over. And this is even a man with a challenged vocal cords,
you know,
and he would destroy him. He is highly intelligent. I don't know if you've ever read his writings, but he's well aware. He wrote an endorsement for my book, and it took me a minute. I had to look it up and look at words and go, what does that mean? Wow, geez, where's this guy come from? He's that intelligent. But as we've just learned with COVID, intelligent doesn't always mean awake. And sometimes the most intelligent people are the ones who are the first ones to adhere to authoritarian advice. And the reason, as we expose in the Great Awakening, is because when you have somebody who's been through all the systems of law school and state-funded university and who knows what else, they're wired to believe professor, to believe whatever they're being taught. And I see that a lot with highly intelligent people. It's hard for them to consider that all of these top-level people in their lives might actually be incorrect.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the moment, though, at least a lot of the scientists that I've worked with have come to that conclusion of realizing that they were trained by the people that are noted for being the top Nobel Prize winning people, and they were wrong. And there's a new appreciation to be found, I believe, for the common person, for the person who, as we stated in the Great Awakening, the ones who I've witnessed that were harder to fool were the farmers, the people that are just tuned into the planet, doing their simple work, who don't listen to a lot of the media. They're not wired by propaganda. They just looked at it, with their clear logical eyes and said, I'm going to wait. I don't know if I'm going to put something in my body that isn't tested. And I don't know if it's, I'm just going to wait. This could turn out bad. And so it's kind of the simple people, which I love that because that's what I'm teaching my two boys right now is like, you know, there's an education to be had, but don't complicate things. Be a simple man because life is actually really simple. This planet, our God creates everything, every medicine, every food grows right from the soil. It's all right there. And we complicate it with all these new ideas and trying to, you know, I love innovation. I love technology. But the truth is we don't need it. You know, it's fun to evolve with it and to create all these new things. But look at all the promises we've had in our, to the decades of our lives. We're about the same age, Mike. And look at all the promises of we've heard of life, of time-saving technologies, right? The microwave, whatever it might be. And what is the one thing everyone's struggling with right now? Lack of time. So have any of these appliances really, really been time-saving appliances? No, that we're all distracted by so many appliances and gadgets and gizmos right now that when we have a free moment, that we should actually be present with our family, enjoying dinner, doing what I did last night, which was just take my son out into the backyard. We grabbed towels. We laid him on the grass. And we just looked up at the stars and had a beautiful conversation.
That's awesome.
You know, and it's like, but there's almost no time to do that anymore.
Well, and you're exactly right. And also the disconnection that is so prevalent in society today, especially among the youth, because when you and I grew up, you know, I was a kid in the 1970s, you know, pre-internet, obviously, and we played in the real world. You know, we rode bikes and jumped off ramps and built tree houses and
caught
swings
and crawdads and exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We're playing in the real world, you know, and we were learning about the real world then and learning about ourselves and our interaction with other people in the real world and learning a lot about nature. I mean, you know, even my mom was teaching me gardening and we were harvesting food and we grew our own grapes and things like that. And of course, okra, because, you know, in the Midwest, there's nothing easier to grow than okra. And then, of course, you have to pickle it and can it and all that, which is great. But today's kids, they have virtual farms on their iPhones and they don't know anything about farming. You know, too many of them, I should say. Now, the homeschooled kids are doing great, by the way.
Yeah.
But the government school kids, so many of them are turning out to be oblivious. It's a disconnect from reality that I think we're seeing expressions of that in issues like transgenderism. It's a disconnect, right? It's the disembodiment of what you are.
It is. And it's actually a very sly way to push everyone towards the acceptance of transhumanism. That's what's really going on.
Good point.
Because the more time that we are surrounded by the digital jungle and we're not actually taking off our shoes and walking in real grass and going camping and at least bringing balance to that experience because we're surrounded by the digital world right now. And you know, my world is everything I edit, everything I shoot, everything's in digital world, and I couldn't do it without that incredible technology. So I embrace it. But ultimately, Mike, we have to take responsibility for how we got here. While there's certainly people who have facilitated these circumstances, it's the people who have enabled them to take control over our lives. And it's our addiction to comfort and convenience. We want everything easy. We want everything fast. We want the magic pill. And so we'll keep taking that bait of the, you know, like I said, the time-saving appliances and not really realizing it's actually robbing us of time. It's doing the opposite of what it's been promised to create.
Right.
And so the more that we take responsibility for our lives and we realize these people are going to continue, they're never going to stop. But they don't actually have to have the impact on their lives on our lives that they have right now. That's why I love these boycotts that are happening. People are waking up to realize, look, you might even be full on in for you know, Pride Month or whatever, but people are tired of this being pushed down our throats. And when Target has tuck-friendly bathing suits, which means a young boy can now hide their privates in a bathing suit, that's when parents, when you just cross the line, Target. And for us to see that Anheuser-Busch and Target and all these other companies are suffering because the people said enough. That's an incredible moment for us to realize we actually do have the power. We've been told this forever. And I, as an activist, a veteran activist, we've been saying forever, vote with your dollar. And I don't know that people understood what we meant way back then, but now they're realizing, oh, I'm voting by not giving my dollar to Target or Anheuser-Busch or whatever it is, because you don't cross the line that way. You don't push ideologies. And the truth is, it's all these companies pushing these ideologies, they don't care one bit about the ideology itself. They're trying to generate high ESG scores, environmental social governance scores, which is, as you know, the whole system pushed by the World Economic Forum and beyond that is forcing these companies to go woke. And if they don't, then they lose their credit lines, they lose investment, and they suffer financially. So it's all a financial move. And that's how the NBA and all these major organizations, that's why they have gone, you know, forward with all of these woke ideologies. It's all coercion. And so by us saying no and actually doing harm to that company's bottom line, they're now starting to back out. And I see stuff all over YouTube of major companies saying ESGs are bad for business, back away, this is not working. And that's the beginning of something wonderful. I mean, there's a lot of incredible progress happening right now. As much as I care about all races, clearly look at my movie. It's, you know, it's like of all colors and cultures of people within the Great Awakening. I also understand that affirmative action is the opposite of what people think it is. And it's done great harm to certain minority cultures, particularly the Asians. And I have an Asian wife and two half Asian boys. So it matters to me. And the fact that we just struck down affirmative action is people don't understand. They're going to call that racist and bigoted and all that. It's not. It actually brings us closer to equality.
No, it's extraordinary. And you're referring to the Supreme Court decision, which I'm celebrating as well, which says that academia can no longer blatantly discriminate against Asians and whites. And those are the two groups that have been discriminated against the most in academia. And my wife is Asian as well. And so we are very much aware of this issue. But yeah, the left says no, that they demand to be able to discriminate in order to be anti-discrimination somehow. It doesn't make any sense.
All of these policies ultimately achieve the opposite of what they're branded to achieve. And
yes,
that's what we all have to wake up to. So, it always starts with some benevolent purpose. When you hear politicians out there, particularly the ones that are prone to not doing what they promise they're doing, and that suddenly now it seems like they care about something, trust me, the truth is in the opposite direction of what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, this is part of the Great Awakening, is people realizing that we're just sick and tired of being lied to constantly about everything, right? That's part of the process. But let me ask you kind of a critical question that I think both of us get. And so this isn't me saying this to you, Mickey. Let's say this is an audience member watching who might say the same criticism about both of us. And here's what they might say. Say, well, okay, you made a film, or okay, we did an interview, I did a podcast, whatever. We created content bringing awareness to these problems. And they would say, well, so what? Like, what are we actually doing to help solve these problems? But I know part of that answer is, I mean, first we have to become aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. But what would you say to somebody who had that criticism against you and I? Say, you're just you know, throwing images together and making a film, and it's just another movie, you know, so what? What would you say to that?
Well, I would say, what else do you expect? In a world that has been damaged and a humanity that has been divided by lies, why would you push against something that's trying to undo that? That's all we're doing, is ultimately saying, choose for yourself. Don't believe anything I have to say. That's why when I make a film, whatever claim I make, we kind of develop the aesthetic style of putting the patent right there, zooming in, underlining it, and showing people, because I know people won't do their own research. They'll just say, oh, he's probably lying. Okay, good. We'll show it to you. Or if we say somebody did something or said something, I won't even put it in the film unless I can show you that proof. And so it's right there. And I think ultimately what you're getting at is important, because there's a On one hand, it's a double-edged sword. It's really wonderful that people have lost trust. And on the other hand, it's very dangerous that people have lost trust, because we have a tendency to act in extreme ways, right? So it's fully on or fully off. And so instead of understanding that there's a reason and something good about losing trust in all of these authoritarian voices that have led us astray for so long, if you lose complete trust, then you're going to be, there's nothing that you'll be able to do to actually course correct your life, because you'll have no one to listen to. So ultimately, how do you know who to listen to? And that's a great question. I would say, no matter how convincing my films are, you should question it. You should be skeptical. You should go do your own homework. But above all, because that's not even foolproof, because I have to go 8 to 20 pages deep on Google just to find an alternative truth to what they want us to see in a search
True.
Result. So that's
right.
not even a foolproof method. So what is then? Now we get into something much more metaphysical, right? And that is, I believe that we were born with intuitive primal ability to listen to the broadcast of God, call it nature, whatever you choose to call it, this infinite broadcast of intelligence that is always there in the room, just like the room you're in now has a multitude of cell signals, and you type in a frequency and it'll actually connect you to whatever frequency is just floating in the air right now. Wi-Fi signals everything, invisible but clearly present. And so there's this information that's always there, and we choose to tune in to listen to the opinion of people instead of slow down and whatever you want to call it. If you want to call it meditation, if that works for you, cool. You want to call it prayer, awesome. Whatever it is, be still. Learn to listen again. And I think I may have talked about this the first time I did your show, but I'll repeat it again because it's worth repeating, and I'll do it in a nutshell. I was offered, after Plandemic 1, $17 million to share the licensing of Plandemic 2. I was first against it, and then I met the people on the phone, and they were referred by a very dear friend of mine that I trust very much, and I really liked them a lot. So I thought, well, maybe, okay, I think this is a go. This might actually work. And they gave me the big sales pitch of, imagine what you would do with that amount of money. And I said, yeah, imagine what I would do. I would create multiple films and make a difference on this planet. So I'm not against having that level of money. Okay, cool. And by the third phone call, they were designing a landing page that they wanted me to see. And during that moment, as I was exploring this landing page, I got the clear guidance. The answer is no, back out. There's no way you're doing this. And it was so loud and clear that I know that any time I've ever resisted that in my life, it's caused some problem, some suffering, some level of suffering in my life, and some drama. And so in the middle of this conversation, I stopped everyone. They were talking, looking at the website that they were building. And I ended up telling them, I have to back out of this. I can't do this. Now, my friend who brokered the deal was not happy. And the people didn't understand why. And I couldn't give them a real solid answer. I just said, I'm just clear that the answer is no. And I'm so sorry. Whatever you've spent on this, bill me for it. I'll pay you. I hate to back out of anything like this, but the answer is no. So my friend calls me back. I hang up. He calls me right back. He does his best to say, you know, please reconsider. These are good people. I vouch for them. I said, it has nothing to do with that. Well, all I know is I'm listening. And anytime I don't listen to that voice, it's so clear, something happens, and I have to say no. His name is Reno, very dear friend of mine. And he said, all right, man. And
no, I think I know.
Remember that?
So I think I know Reno.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, you do. You do know Reno.
Yeah, I do know Reno.
That's
yeah.
right. You know Reno.
He's yeah.
a very dear friend of mine.
Oh, he, yeah. An amazing good, individual. Good yeah.
And he might have even been the ones that connected us, Mike, way back.
Could have been. Yeah. I think so. Connected. Yeah.
That's right. So you know Reno.
I've known Reno for... a long time.
Ask him every detail of the story. And so a little while later, 2 weeks, a month, I don't know what it was. My wife sees something. She goes, oh, this isn't good. And she shows it to me. And I realize it's the group that was making the offer. And they were set up. I don't think they really truly did anything wrong, but they were being fully indicted. And it was really bad press. And we would have been snagged up in this indictment for sure. And Reno called me back and he just said, man, I will never doubt you again. How the hell, are you psychic? And I said, no, I'm not psychic. I just felt it. You know, I listened to it. And so for me, and a long answer to your short question is, we have to get back to that. There's something that is always there and available to speak to us and through us. And there have been a concerted effort to divide us from that intelligence so that we follow the leader, we follow other humans. And when we listen to that intelligence, when we listen to the voice of God, I'm just going to call it that because that's what I've learned that it is for myself. It's remarkable at how much better our choices in life get. And as we all know, a good life or bad life depends on the quality of the choices we make. And so for me, to the people that might doubt what you and I are doing, I just say, listen to that voice and ask yourself what makes better sense, what you're hearing on MSNBC or what you're experiencing right here with Mike Adams or in my movies.
Add to that too, plus I think even your original Plandemic film has been so vindicated, proven correct again and again and again with the things that have come out. And I know, of course, you know, the so-called fact checkers, which are really lie spinners, they attack, both of us. But the truth is, if you look what's happening in the real world, the vaccine damage is real. The masks cause, neurodevelopmental retardation of some children. The social distancing was a joke. The mRNA injections were never proven to be safe or effective, and so on and so on. Just on and on and on. The things that you said in the first film and your guests like Judy Mikovits and so on have all been proven to be true. So think about it, folks. This movie, The Great Awakening, this new film, what it talks about, that's going to be seen, it's going to be realized by millions of people around the world, if not billions, over the next 5 years, because it's all happening. It's an accelerated situation at this point. So Mickey, you're we're going to have to call you like Mickey Nostradamus or something, because of your films are seeing what's coming and documenting it.
Well, thank you for that, Mike. And I have to also give credit where credit's due. I'm really good at picking the right people to be on camera, and they've made a lot of the predictions themselves and have educated me in my path to wake up. And so I'm just grateful for my team too, that also does very deep and critical research to make sure they know that if we make any claims in my film, it's got to be foolproof. Yeah. You have to look inside and out in every possible way. And then also, how do we articulate it in such a way that it just doesn't further polarize people? Someone asked me the other day, it must feel amazing to be vindicated after 3 years. And I said, actually, I would rather have been wrong. You know what I mean?
It's a
bittersweet thing, because I would be much better for humanity had I been wrong, because it would just be one guy who has egg on his face. So I don't take great pride in saying, ha ha, we got you, we were right, because it kind of sucks that we're right, to be honest.
I know about that more than anyone. I mean, I've been talking about this for 20 years, and it wasn't until the last few years that a lot of people realized that my warnings from 2007, I was warning that Big Pharma was working on depopulation type of approaches, but it was a pretty lonely place to be, 15 plus years ago.
Let me ask you something, Mike, because I get this from people all the time, and my answer is pretty short and simple. People always say, how do you remain so positive? Because you doing research all day long, most doomy, gloomy stuff on the planet. Yet you're upbeat and always positive and certain of victory and all that. And for me, I always say, because I know how the story ends, I've studied the work of Joseph Campbell, who spent his life studying all the stories that humanity has been telling itself forever since the beginning of time. And I know how the story ends. There's a reason we've told the same hero's journey story over and over and over. And it's and as far as I can tell, we're about to reach that fiery crescendo moment that brings the hero to its knees. And then the hero rises and slays the dragon and the light wins. It's just a story we've been telling over and over again. But how do you, my friend, because you have been doing this a lot longer than me, and I thank you. I have thanked you before, because I recognize that people like yourself have paved the way for me to even be able to do what I'm doing now. But you're always also so chipper and smiling, and how do you maintain that?
Well, thank you for that comment. So first of all, I'm you have me blushing, because this is supposed to be an interview about you, not me. But look, just to keep it short and simple, number one, I spend time in nature every day. All right. Wow. So I live on a ranch. I'm walking my animals every day, no matter how hot it is, no matter how much it's raining, whatever. I might only miss 3 days a year. I walk my goats and my dogs, and I check on the donkeys, and I'm hands-on with the chickens and gathering eggs. And this morning I was setting up a spray mister for my old goat, who's almost dead. She's in such bad shape, I have to lift her up on her hind legs so she can get up. And I thought she was going to pass away, actually, the night of your film's preview. the rollout, but she's still there. But I set up a mister for her so she can be cooler because of the super crazy hot weather. But I'm in nature, I'm hands-on. And then the other thing is, I understand this is a process, just like you said, Joseph Campbell, the hero's journey. This process of things getting crazy, insanely bad is a necessary step for The Great Awakening, the title of your film. People won't see it until they are forced to see it, because not everybody's got that courage to look ahead. Most people react to what's in front of them right now. And until that now gets so painful and insane that they're forced to change, they won't change. So this process is a necessary process. And like you, I agree that we win in the end, that there will be a revolution of human freedom, awakening, understanding, and healing. And I'm just planning to be here for that revolution and to help make that happen. That's it.
Great answer. Thank you.
No, that's the short version of it. And you know, I mean, what are we supposed to do? Just live in depression all day? Oh, it's so horrible. Jump off tall buildings. No. You know,
I just had this go around with one of my partners today, one of my dear brothers, Chris, who is a partner in the Rebel Lion, the Fierce Immunity product that I showed you before we went on air. He reached out and he said, I really love the roundtable you did with RFK Jr. I just hope he wins, because we cannot survive 4 years. They're going to push Newsom into this. We can't survive.
Oh, gosh.
And I said, Listen, I can't stand that character, Newsom. But let's step back a little bit. We could survive another 4 years. If that's it, how it ends up being. And I also said, maybe there's something divine in that, because there's so many people right on the edge of waking up right now. Maybe it takes another 2 years of his insane policies to see that whatever happened in San Francisco is now happening all across the United States. Maybe that's what we need. As horrible as that would be to consider, just, you know, surrender to the idea that even if that were to happen, they were to cheat him into to office that way and have that little slick car salesman suddenly taking up seat in the Oval Office. I don't know, but if we believe that something divine is unfolding right now, as unwanted as that would be as an outcome, maybe in the end, that would be the thing that would wake up the rest of us, at least the enough to make a mass difference here in this country, which the country that affects the entire world. You know, it's just kind of a recalibration of, let's not get into that mindset that we can't survive we don't want it. We don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to have to deal with that person's shady, raspy voice for 4 years. I get it. We don't want to deal with that.
The thing is, Mickey, there's a heavy, heavy cost to be paid by a lot of innocent people.
Yeah.
And I know you've seen this and you've interviewed people, and you are one of them who has been unfairly criticized in ways that you did not deserve simply because you're trying to tell the truth. But my friend Jeffrey Prather that I was interviewing the other day, I think he said it really well. You know, he's an intelligence officer and, you know, former DIA, you know, he's been inside government for many years, not anymore, but previously. He said, look, we're going to win in the end, but there's going to be a very heavy cost to a lot of innocent people along the way. And that's the way it has always been throughout history. Even in Joseph Campbell's work, there are innocent bystanders who are eaten by the dragon before the dragon gets slayed, right?
Right.
And the hero achieves victory, but the hero himself pays a very high personal price. That's part of the hero's journey. The hero loses a family member. The hero loses a child, and so on. And as a nation, we're going to lose, we're already losing millions of people to the jab right now, and the cost has only just begun.
Yeah. Well put. And sometimes the hero even perishes.
Absolutely.
But it's the battle that the hero was standing for.
That's right. He's only redeemed in his sacrifice, his Christ-like sacrifice to save the rest of the world. He is consumed by the evil, but destroys it in the process. You know, a common theme of movies as well, right?
That's right. And then now the question, who's the hero? And I would say the hero is all of us. That's why all of the most iconic movies that are, you know, worth remembering have a very cliche at this point. It's become cliche that the narrative, the message is the forces within and you are the one. And that is really the jewel of Joseph Campbell's work lifetime of work is to understand that, that that is, you know, the hero's journey is roughly about an anti-hero, a reluctant hero that goes out to try to find help. And they're a witness to a circumstance, a life or death circumstance, and they go to try to find the person that can actually do something about it. And along the way, they're thwarted by all kinds of, you know, tricksters and what you call threshold guardians, and to really test their ability to stay the course, they're tested.
Right.
And then they meet these mentors that start to give them lessons. And as I've been saying on podcasts, because one of the greatest hero journey movies, that because it's just so obvious, is The Karate Kid. You know, the Karate Kid's getting bullied and he's tired of it, and he goes and he finds the sensei and he says, "Master, teach me how to fight." And he says, "Okay, here's a paintbrush." And the Karate Kid says, "What? Go paint the fence." And he paints the fence. "I'm done. Okay, I'm ready to learn how to fight now." "Great. Wax the car."
Right.
"Why am I waxing all your old cars?" "Just do it." And then he's pissed off. "This old man just using me." Not until he's actually engaged in the action of battle did he realize, does he realize he built the muscle memory to block and to punch and to
wax
fight.
Wax on, wax off, yeah.
Wax off. So we're all building the muscle memory right now through mundane activities that we don't even realize that are going to serve us in that moment of battle.
Yeah.
And so our struggles, for me, it's the struggles. It's when something goes wrong. It's me standing on the World Trade Center, picking up body parts, realizing all that was boot camp for me to be able to deal with a lot of what I see now. We see a lot of video footage, the kind of stuff that only gets blurred out by the time it gets to the public. And it's horrific. So we have to see this stuff. But I can deal with that now because I've thickened my skin and I've been conditioned that to deal with what it really looks like. I don't want to hide from any of that. And I don't hide any of it from my children.
Excellent point.
You know, it's very important. I want them to know what's really going on in the world and to maintain that thing that you and I just talked about. And at the same time, you don't have to be scared. And you can be happy and joyful and have fun and do all of that while you're looking the dragon dead in the eyes. And I think you're even more powerful when you maintain that level of high vibration. And don't match their low frequency by getting depressed and scared. I almost feel like people ask me all the time, like, "Are you concerned about your safety?" I said, "Look, I know what I'm doing is very dangerous." And as you know, Mike, I already had my run in with the law. But I feel protected in ways that are ineffable. I can't even explain them right now. And I think that it's almost like I feel like I'm off the radar because I'm not scared.
There's also, you know, divine protection is a real thing.
It's a real thing.
It's absolutely real. Otherwise, I wouldn't even be here. And I was just marveling the other day. I know this is slightly off topic, but it is relevant. I was marveling, almost 1 or 2 months ago, I was severely injured and I suffered a pretty severe injury. And in watching my body heal itself, I was able to really pay attention to the fact that there is an energetic grid, a lattice upon which your physical cells rebuild new structures, rebuild nerves, rebuild blood vessels, rebuild ligaments, what have you. And yet there's an underlying energetic infrastructure that is there that modern medicine does not even acknowledge exists. Mm-hmm. But we see this with things like phantom pain of people who have lost a limb. They can still feel the limb. It's still present. Mm-hmm. And things like Kirlian photography and so on. The energy infrastructure is part of the gift from God, as I see it. It's part of the life, the spirit, the soul.
I'm so glad you're talking about this. Because our fellow Christian friends, sometimes I will say something and I read the comments and people are like, "Oh, you New Agey." Now listen, I used to be a full-fledged member of the New Age cult. I know it really well. There's a reason that has become a cult and it's been so attacked. Everything with great influence, everything that actually holds power has been infiltrated and turned on itself. And so when these people started to understand, what is a New Age movement ultimately? Well, it's Eastern philosophies adapted by the West. And what you just talked about is one of those, understanding who we are scientifically as electromagnetic beings and that there are energy grids and things that we're part of.
That's right.
When I talk this way, sometimes people, they just don't, if it's not in the, you know, articulated that way in the Bible, then it's like it doesn't belong in the conversation at all. It's New Age, you know, gobbledygook. And I think that that's part of that extremism that I mentioned earlier, where we throw the baby out with the bathwater because we recognize that a lot of People have been indoctrinated, and I was one of them, in the New Age movement. But that doesn't mean some of the principles that you just mentioned aren't real, and that they weren't created by God, and they have been kept from us and even demonized in such a way that we'll stay away from them.
True.
Because when we understand what these instruments are capable of, we know more about this than we do this, and that's a problem. That's a real problem.
I mean, God intended us to be beings of light first, and then there's a physical structure that hangs upon the lattice of the energy that we are within. And that is a Christian truth. And I don't know if anybody criticized me about that. I don't pay any attention to it. They just don't know. It's okay. You know, there's different levels of knowledge, and some people aren't ready for it. It's okay.
That's right.
But you know that as a filmmaker, you're like, not everybody's ready for your film, but they probably will be soon.
Shockingly, I'm still waiting for the big backlash on The Great Awakening, because I'm amazed at how many people were. When I thought, am I going to mention the word communism? Really, maybe I should avoid that. In my other films, I would kind of roundabout way talk about, you know, eugenics and things, but I'm like, don't mention that name. That name's going to, that's what they're going to obsess on, and they're going to kill the whole point. It's a good thing and a bad thing. How many people are ready to hear the word communism is wonderful and also super scary, because that means it's so prevalent and in their face. And I was just doing some research this morning, and it's right here in front of me, and I'll share it with you. And that is, we know there was a gay pride march in New York City, and they were singing the song, "We're Coming for Your Children." And then they said, they backed off and said, "Oh, it's just fun, just, you know, whatever it might be." Well, you know what? Maybe it's not that innocent.
Okay. What a choice of a song.
One of the organizers of the event is a gay rights activist. He is a proud activist for NAMBLA, which is a North American Man Boy Love Association. North American Man Boy Love Association is a pedophilia and advocacy organization in the United States, and he also identifies as a communist. He's one of the organizers of that march.
Right.
And so it's like, here we have the pedophilia, we have the "We're Coming for Your Children," we have the "I am a communist." If people don't see that at this point, it's right there. And that's where these ideologies, they're not innocent. They're not just fun and we're just trying to stir up a little bit of, you know, controversy. No, some people there might be just going along with it. They have no idea, just like I was going along with it when I was marching with Bernie. There's the people that started that chant. Trust me, they know exactly what they're saying and where it's leading.
Well, yeah, and Satanism goes along with a lot of those folks. You know, communism and then atheism and then Satanism is often the spectrum that they live on. But let me change the subject here briefly. And also, I need to be respectful of your time. We're a little bit over an hour here. And
I'm in no rush for you.
Okay, you're okay. Okay, good. Yeah. Well, let me say this. You know, you're always invited to join us in studio. And if you ever get to Central Texas, give me a heads up. Come on in, and we'll have some fun. I don't know. We'll share some smoothies or whatever. I've got some new stuff to give you. We have like really good lab tested macadamia nuts. Who couldn't benefit from some Mac nuts? By the way, you come over here, I'll load you up.
Lab tested, not lab created, I hope.
Lab tested, not lab created.
I would love to. Listen, next time we do a podcast, I want to be sitting right next to you.
Well, you are always welcome. And your friend JP Sears is also going to be stopping by in a few weeks.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's coming in studio.
Oh, geez. We're partners now. We have a new immune boosting formula that we developed. And so we've just joined partnership within the last month.
Well, I tell you what, why don't you bring your product and come out, and we'll do a show about that partnership, or you could come out with him when he's scheduled to come.
Okay. I'll call him. What do you have the date exactly? Or you can text me.
Yeah. I don't want to say it on the show, but,
Yeah,
I'll text you, and maybe you could both come out here together. It'd be a blast.
We can ride together. We'll do that.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay. Yeah, I'd love to find out about what you're doing with your new product and everything, formulations. Okay. And of course, I'm a fan of JP Sears and his work well. And now that we know that RFK Jr., by the way, is ripped, and of course, JP Sears is ripped, we got to have like a push-up contest between those two on the show.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, it was pretty impressive. It's very inspiring to see RFK. I know that he works out a lot and he's very health conscious, but to see him at 69 years old.
I couldn't believe it. Someone sent me the photo. I said, that's got to be Photoshop. No. There's no way.
It's not. It really, I'm 56. And so I was like, wow, what I had this attitude of like, it's time to slow down. No, it's time to step it up. Let's go. So I actually aired up the tires on my bike today. They've been flat for about 6 months, aired them up today. And in the heat, went for a ride.
See,
it's time to get back into shape.
That is so funny, because after I saw Bobby doing that, I hit the kettlebells, man. I did. I hit the kettle. I'm like,
I'm sure we're not alone.
I'm younger than this guy. I need to be at least as strong as he, you know how we are, our competitive male side. So I'm like pumping kettlebells and feeling great. And I'm like,
and
thank you, Bobby. That's awesome.
Very busy person too. So there's no excuse, right? He finds a time to work out.
But I make excuses. I'm sure he can make plenty of excuses, but he doesn't. Like you say, it's amazing. But yeah, physical fitness is important. It's not just nutrition. We gotta use our bodies. And
it's so important. It's so important to stay healthy. And that is why we actually created that product that we'll share with you when JP and I are there together, because
okay, it's a date.
We were really looking at what's one of the issues that we're going to be facing right now. And that is, well, come cold and flu season with all the injured immune systems, if people aren't feeling their best, they can't do their biggest work. And so we need to find some way to rebuild natural immunity because it's been damaged. And so we'll tell you more about that.
No kidding. Yeah. All right. Well, there's a teaser of what's coming up, folks. I think that'll be fascinating in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, let me just remind the audience, go to plandemicseries.com. You can watch The Great Awakening there. And do you have a downloadable version that people can purchase?
Of course. Yeah, that's the model that we created. Is right now we're, if people understand what globalization is, which is a centralization of everything, because then it can be controlled with one push of a button, right? So centralized government, currency, all of that. So the solution to all of that is decentralization. And so that's one of the reasons I give my films away. So go there. There's a downloadable file. Don't just watch the film. Download it. Put it on your own computer. And share that through your own networks.
You don't even charge for the download?
No, zero. I've not charged for anything. Matter of fact, we have an offer on the table right now for a distribution deal, and they want to know what is the best price for licensing. And I said, zero.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Well,
no,
hold on a second. So then we got to talk about, we have Brighteon University now, brightu.com. Yeah. And we feature a new film every Saturday.
It's yours.
On that. We could run your film there?
Of course.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Let me get my team in touch with your team. And also, Mickey, did you know I just launched a new show called Decentralized TV?
I did not know that.
It just launched, yesterday. It's at decentralized.tv. It's about decentralized living.
That's the point. I'm so glad. It doesn't surprise me that you're onto that, because that's this distribution model, which now a lot of people are emulating. Even Project Veritas started emulating it. Is to realize that once you put the power in the hands of the people, if we put something on one site or three sites, they'll just zap those sites.
Right.
But
right.
The thing that took place of I used to have a desire to have an Academy Award. That's long dead.
Never going to happen.
That would be a badge of shame at this point.
Yes.
But the thing I'm going to frame in place of where I would have put the Academy Award is a chart that we got after Plandemic 1, where Google was saying that Plandemic 1 was the toughest piece of media that they ever tried to track. And it's simply because we gave the file to the world.
Uh-huh.
They couldn't stop it because it was in the hands of the people.
Wow. Well, okay, I can't tell you this on camera, but we're not far away from a project announcement that will make your film forever immutable. No one will ever be able to censor it anywhere. Not any government, not any military. And I'll tell you about that maybe off camera. And it's something we're working on with some really amazing people who share our vision. So
when you say not far, what are we looking at time-wise?
Probably less than 90 days.
Oh, perfect. In 90 days, we have two very important movies coming out that are going to be heavily censored. It's the truth about what happened with the vaccine rollout.
Well, okay, then let's talk off camera. Well, let's see what we can do to help you get that out there. And then also, we need to help you with a revenue model so that you can continue to have funding for your upcoming films. So let's do that when you come visit with your new product with JP Sears, and get a lot of support for you, because the world loves what you're doing. The awake world, I should say, loves what you're doing, and more people are joining that.
That is true. It's a wonderful time to be alive. Thank you so much.
It really is.
Support, Mike.
Well, thank you so much, Mickey. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you on, and I really look forward to seeing you in person and to sharing your film. So we'll talk about that. We'll get the word out and get the files out, and I'll let you in on some of what we're working on here. If you hang out just a minute after this, I'll share that with you.
That sounds great. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Absolutely. We thank you, Mickey. We thank you. God bless you, Mickey. You're a real gem for humanity. We're lucky to have you here in our lifetimes.
And thank you, brother. God bless you, too.
God bless you. And thank all of you for watching. Hope you enjoyed this interview, and much more yet to come from Mickey Willis and the people around him. And also here on Brighteon.com. Of course, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, free speech video platform, so that we can have conversations like this without censorship. And major announcements are coming soon, so just stay tuned. Thank you for watching today. Feel free to repost this interview wherever you'd like. Just give credit to Mickey Willis and his website, PlandemicSeries.com. Thanks for watching. Take care, everybody. Today's interview is brought to you by HealthRangerStore.com, where we have, of course, lab-tested almost all certified organic products for health, nutrition, for personal care, for home care. If you take a look at HealthRangerStore.com, you can see here we've got Turmeric Gold Plus, Detox Foot Pads, Colloidal Silver Nasal Spray, Organic Elderberry and Echinacea Extract. This is the one that was formulated by Dr. Ed Group. It's really amazing. We have non-fluoride toothpaste alternatives. This is an amazing toothpaste product that I helped formulate. Aloe vera extract powder. So much more, really hundreds of products. Freeze-dried organic blueberry powder. This is very high in anthocyanins. Just amazing. If you check out the full product line, you'll be blown away by what we have available right now at HealthRangerStore.com. And every purchase helps support this platform and our desire to bring you the truth, to bring you fascinating guests, information that can help you prepare for the madness of the world that seems to have consumed our planet at the moment. My goodness, you're going to need health and nutrition to make it through everything that's coming, because where we are right now is only the beginning. So we appreciate your support. HealthRangerStore.com. Take care.